brother. What's up?
This is a good recording, man.
Yeah, brother, like,
dig it.
Stop
it.
Right on.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday, the 5th of November. And election 2020 grinds on, and it is a great pleasure to be in your company this morning with a wonderful panel to make sense of what is happening this morning. And we'll go over what we know, we'll go over what we don't know, and we'll talk about it all this morning as we dissect it with our terrific panel. We welcome your letters, of course. They were very important yesterday. They will be very important today, as they always are, but we went to a lot of them yesterday, and we hope to do that again today. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the group to you. WAMC's very own Dr. Alan Chartok is in the house. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm pretty exhausted. You know, the day after, I slept very little the night after the night of the election. But last night I went to sleep, and boy, I felt as if I had been drugged. I wonder if everybody else experienced that kind of same thing.
You know, I stayed up all night last night. I was watching those numbers dribble
really?
In, and I don't know. I'm on maybe an hour and a half, but I have to say it was fascinating. It delivered. Did anyone else stay up late all night? Anyone else, or am I the only idiot? Okay. We go to Jim Henler.
You are far from being an idiot. You are not an idiot. You may have been mistaken.
Jim Henler is with us, Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI and Director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration. We will rely quite a great deal on Jim's expertise when it comes to data and the compilation of it. Good morning, Jim. How are you? Hi, Jim. Hello, Jim.
He's on. Yes,
there you go. Okay. Hi.
Hey.
How are you?
About 10 o'clock last night, I was also a late nighter last night when I was getting ready to go to bed, feeling pretty good. And then I made the mistake of turning on news, watching a few numbers come in from Arizona.
Yep.
By midnight, I was too depressed to fall asleep and sat there watching.
Well, that's it. And then they said,
hours.
Whoa, Maricopa County is going to have more numbers at midnight. I'm saying, oh, all right, I'll stay up till midnight. And then they said, oh, well, we're expecting a couple more votes from Georgia. I'm like, all right, well, I'll stay up till 2. And the next thing I know, it's like 3:45 and I'm still, yeah. So, well, here we are. Also, well, Jim, good morning. Welcome. I'm very glad you're here. Vera Carius-Kelly joins us, Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics. Good morning, Vera.
Good morning. Well, I feel slightly more rested because I've decided to not stay up past midnight and rather check in the morning, but it also wasn't very satisfying.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I have to say, I'm not complaining about staying up late. I love this stuff. I love watching the numbers come in. I know it's nerve-wracking as hell, but there is something just invigorating about it. Jen Smith is engagement editor for the Seattle Times Education Lab. She was a longtime Berkshire Eagle reporter. She has a very cool new job in Seattle. She has not moved to the other coast yet, so we benefit by having her on our program. Good morning, Jen. How are you?
Good morning, Joe and panel. I'm very happy to be on this red eye edition of the roundtable. Although I will say yesterday I went to the doctors and I had to get both a flu shot and a tetanus shot. So I was out like a light last night.
Oh my God, that tetanus shot hurts. Oh, I feel sorry for you.
A little little sore, but I am here for it this morning and feeling good.
You know, on top of election results, you don't need to get shots, too. I mean, isn't that enough?
I'm just like, bring it on.
Enough for any human to withstand. Linda Ellerbe is a Peabody and Emmy Award-winning journalist. She is my absolute hero. Good morning, Linda. How are you?
I'm fine. I slept okay last night, Tuesday night. I had a meltdown at midnight. I burst into tears and spent most of the rest of the night crying. I called my daughter in Portland, and I think she understood, okay, mother's having a breakdown now. Talk her down quietly, or at least get off the phone with her. Yesterday evening, I was prepared to have another very all-night day, but my granddaughter, who is 17, called me yesterday evening, I think possibly on the advice of her mother, who might have said something like, Violet, why don't you call your grandmother and see if she's still about to leap off a building? So Violet called me, and I explained to her, you know, what my problem was and what my sadness was in specific ways. And my 17-year-old granddaughter said, but Go-Go, which is what she calls me, Fulton mm-hmm. County. You have to put some reliance on Fulton County.
Right.
Now, she's 17 years old, okay? And that she is telling me about the count in a suburban in Atlanta. It stopped me cold. And she said, and the other thing you can rely on, Go-Go, is us. Now, she's turning 18 next month, so she couldn't vote. She said, the Gen X and the Gen Z and the millennials and even you boomers, she said, you've had your chance. We're here, and we're going to save you. We're the ones that took you out in the streets after George Floyd, and we're going to help you out. We're going to save you all. And for reasons unbeknownst to me, I slept okay last night.
Well, good. Well, not only do I love your granddaughter, but I want to vote for her.
Right. Yeah, I said, thank you. I said, thank you. And there was a long pause. And she said, well, that's kind of surprising. You're the first grown-up that said that to me.
Well, we are here to figure out what's going on, and it's an ever-moving, ever-evolving puzzle. Here's what I have right now. If anybody has any disagreement or has heard something otherwise, please jump in. And as soon as I finish this, we'll go through and go around with everybody and see your thoughts. So, as it stands right now, there are still six states that have not been called. Those states include, and I'll read these two first, Alaska and North Carolina. Alaska always takes a long time. It will continue to take a long time. It is expected to go to Donald Trump easily. North Carolina is still closer. It has not been called yet. 95% of the vote is in. Again, still expected to go to Donald Trump. That brings us to the four remaining states: Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada. Georgia was a state I was looking at all day yesterday thinking, this has got to be in play, it's got to be in play, and then it very much became in play. And right now, it appears as these votes come in, as Linda just mentioned, Fulton County, Atlanta, these numbers are coming in and they are closing the gap. So Donald Trump is ahead in Georgia, but by a very, very slim margin. And with the number of votes that are still outstanding, which is a number that varies from network to network and from source to source, but there are hundreds of thousands of votes that are still outstanding. They seem to be coming in about 80% Biden, 20% Trump. If that continues, then Georgia is very much in play for the former vice president. That brings us to the state of Arizona, where the opposite was true. Joe Biden ahead comfortably in Arizona. Then this third tranche of votes comes in. So there's the early voting, there's the day of voting, and then there's the mail voting that comes in afterwards. That was coming in yesterday and was coming in favor by a slim margin to Donald Trump. What that is allowed to do over the night is to close that margin. So while Arizona is still not out of the woods, is still very much in play for the vice president, it is narrowing, and narrowing by quite a great deal. Nevada is an enigma to me anyway. There are 7,500 votes, and for some reason that is a really big thing for them, a very difficult thing for them to count. They said last night, originally they said, we're not going to count them until Thursday. Then last night they said, we'll count them and we'll have them by the end of the night. And then about 20 minutes later, they said, no, never mind. We're going to go and continue, and we'll announce them tomorrow, meaning today. Finally, that brings us to my home state of Pennsylvania, the Keystone State, where Donald Trump and Joe Biden, it's 50% for Trump, 48.2% for Joe Biden. Same thing essentially that's going on there, that's going on in Georgia, where there is a large number of votes. Those votes are coming from Philadelphia and Montgomery counties largely, as well as Allegheny County out near Pittsburgh. And those votes seem to be mostly in favor for the former vice president. All right. So if Donald Trump is to win the election, and if he is to be reelected, he will need to win Nevada, Arizona, and Pennsylvania. That's the path. Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania. Now, if Joe Biden wins Pennsylvania, game over. If Joe Biden wins Nevada, Arizona, game over. If Biden wins Georgia and Arizona or Nevada, game over. So those are the paths. Jim, are you spot checking me here? Did I screw anything up?
I think you nailed it, Joe. I'm impressed.
Well, thank you.
I'm always impressed by you. I'm impressed that you made such a complex thing in so few words. That's why you're the host.
Well, so there you go. That is what I... So just so we're all on the same page, and that is one part of our discussion today. Then the other part of the discussion will be, and we'll get to this, although I'm sure it'll be intertwined with what we talk about first, is the legal challenges that the president has already... that are already underway, or that he is threatening in these states, and you get into recounts and mandatory recounts and paid for recounts and all that stuff. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But as far as where we stand right now, Alan, we'll begin with you.
I have very little to say other than to tell you about my prayer pattern. But you know, I am watching as assiduously as you are, because at this stage of the game, in some cases, it's a couple of thousand votes, a couple of hundred votes, which could determine the way this country's going.
Well, and there are, you know, there are paths, so many paths, and it is a lot to watch. And so I would expect, and then one thing I didn't mention, I would expect that as we go through the morning this morning, we'll have updates. We'll know more. Just before we went on the air, more votes came out of Philadelphia County. So, and we're doing pretty much on par with what they've been doing all along. Linda Ellerbe, let's go to you.
Well, I'm rather in Alan's camp. I don't have a lot to say on this issue. I'm not a legal expert. I guess the only thing I would urge viewers who have not watched the movie, The Recount, that perhaps they ought to do so, just to remind them how a few crooked politicians in Broward County in Florida in 2000 managed to get this thrown to the Supreme Court, although it wasn't just the crooked politicians. If you watch that film, in fact, if you watch the election, what became clear was the Democrats got out-lawyered by the Republicans. The Republicans had better lawyers. They got in, demanded a recount. They saw that the recount wasn't going their way, so they said, this recount isn't legitimate. They got it to the Supreme Court, and George Bush, W. Bush, became president and was our president at 9/11. And we invaded Iraq, and all kinds of interesting things happened after that. So I think this recount issue is enormous.
One of the things that I find interesting about that, and that film was amazing. It's actually on HBO Max right now, so if you have HBO, you can see it. I just watched it the other day. It is amazing, from 2008. One of the things that is...
2000.
It's about 2000, but the film came out in 2008.
The film was 2000, yeah.
Right. So Jim, when it comes to, just from my looking at it, we do have to worry about these recounts, but if, and this is a huge if, but if Joe Biden, the former vice president of the United States, is able to win Arizona and hold on there, able to win Nevada, able to win Georgia, and able to win Pennsylvania, that makes any Supreme Court challenge much more difficult, doesn't it? Because we're not talking about one state. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, my belief, and it's just a belief, and I'm not a lawyer either, is if it gets down to one state, I'm much more worried than if it's multiple states, even if it's a small state or two, because for the Supreme Court to come in and call a narrow victory in one state and reverse it sort of in the Bush-Gore way, that seems to me could happen for a lot of reasons. And you know, the Supreme Court could kind of do that without necessarily losing their legitimacy. I suspect Alan may have some things to say on that. But
indeed,
what really worked, but if they try to, you know, if they had to overturn two or three states, I just have a lot of trouble believing that Roberts wouldn't find some way to make that. You know, again, I think he just cares enough about the legitimacy of the court that he would try very hard to find some narrow path to fix it. So that, I mean, you know, I hate the fact that that's my best case hope, but that's what I, you know, that seems to me. But, if it, you know, but I really worry about what happens if it's just, you know,
one state.
Just Pennsylvania.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, Alan, you've been saying for a long time about how Trump, you know, has announced that he was changing the court for that and, et cetera. But, you know, I'm not sure I've ever heard you answer the question, what happens if that happens?
Yeah, well, if the Supreme Court of the United, if the Supreme Court of the United States prostitutes itself the way that I think it's capable of doing, then I think it's over. Trump wins if that happens, because nobody is going to say to the Supreme Court, you can't make that ruling. That's the terrible part about this. Yep. Now, Joe, what I want to know is, since you did such a wonderful job of telling us where all the votes were, how many of the votes that are still yet to be counted in a place like Georgia or Pennsylvania are basically seen to be pro-Biden votes?
Well, it's about 80-20, and it's two major areas that they're coming from. They're large population, large urban population centers. There are very red urban areas that have a half a percentage point of votes that still need to come in. But the major amount of votes, the votes that will make a difference, this doesn't mean they will, but as of right now, they are coming in about 80-20.
They're from,
as Linda was saying, they're from suburban Atlanta, and also where I think it's Macon. Also, I believe is the other city. One other thing I want to throw in is that the president tweeted just 14 minutes ago with in shouty caps, "Stop the count." So there you go.
He sees it coming. So the question is, Joe, my follow-up question is, are there enough of those people from those issues that are thought to be Biden to make the day?
Yeah. And we should know Georgia pretty soon. I mean, I think we'll know Georgia by the end of the day. We may not know Pennsylvania until the weekend, but
so right now Biden is about 20,000 votes behind in Georgia.
Right. And so I believe there's something, and I hear this number changing, but I believe that there's just around 100,000 votes that remain to be counted, somewhere between 80 and 100,000. We're going to have to take a break in a second, but I do want to just quickly remind people that you can write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We would love to get to your letters. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We still have to hear from Vera and Jen. We will do that when we come back. We're going to go to NPR for a quick newscast, and we'll be back right after this short break.
Our travel podcast, Postcards from the Road, brings you on a new adventure each week. Norwegian author Erica Fotland traveled around Central Asia and brought us right to the gates to hell.
Soviet engineers were searching for gas and oil in the desert, and then suddenly the ground collapsed and gas started pouring out. They lit it on fire, and it's still burning.
Visit WAMCpodcasts.org for your next adventure.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. The vote counts are continuing this morning in a number of states, with no official winner yet declared in the 2020 presidential election. Official results are still pending in Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and Alaska. Democratic nominee Joe Biden is 6 electoral votes shy of the 270 needed to win the White House. President Trump has 214. The Trump campaign wants a recount in Wisconsin. It's also filed lawsuits related to vote counts in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. Nevada has 6 electoral votes and is where Biden leads Trump by less than 1% as the counting continues there. Joe Gloria is the voter registrar in Clark County, which includes Las Vegas.
What we have left now is to process provisional ballots, electronic ballots that were sent to overseas voters, electronic ballots that were processed for disabled voters, and also some special ballots for new residents.
Nevada has reported more than 3/4 of its results thus far. The last Republican presidential nominee to win Nevada was George W. Bush in 2004. Senate Republicans continue to hold on to their majority. Maine incumbent Susan Collins has won a 5th term. She defeated Democratic challenger Sarah Gideon. On Wall Street, the Dow is up nearly 400 points. This is NPR News. The foreign minister of France has some thoughts on the U.S. presidential election, regardless of who wins. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports from Paris.
A President Biden would certainly repair some of the transatlantic damage, but Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian said there will always be a before and after Trump. While Biden would be good news for defenders of multilateralism like France and Germany, former French Foreign Minister Hubert Védrine told NPR Europeans are not uniform in their view of President Trump.
Les Polonais, ils adorent Trump.
The Polish love Trump, he says. The Baltic states, too. Plenty of people don't dare say it, but they find the Democrats' multilateralist discourse hypocritical. Védrine says in reality, Europe and the U.S. have been drifting apart since the Obama presidency, and no matter who wins, Europe must now follow its own ideas and set its own course. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
There are calls in Austria's parliament to overhaul the country's domestic intelligence agency and to change laws following this week's deadly attack in Vienna. 4 people were shot to death and 20 others were wounded when a gunman opened fire. The 20-year-old suspect was then shot and killed by police. Later, it was learned the suspect had a prior terrorism conviction for attempting to travel to Syria to join ISIS. Authorities in Austria detained more than a dozen suspects for questioning. I'm Dave Mattingly, NPR News in Washington.
Support comes from the Clark Art Institute, Williamstown, Massachusetts, featuring groundwork, an outdoor exhibition with works by 6 international artists. ClarkArt.edu for information. From Berkshire Center for Weight Loss Surgery, with a focus on life skills and support for long-term success, with sleeve gastrectomy and gastric bypass surgery. Monthly seminars open to the public, 413-395-7510 for registration. From Fluff Alpaca, Hudson's Alpaca General Store, coziness from head to toe, farm-to-fiber fashion and gifts for everyone in the family, for the home, even the dog, fluffalpaca.com. And from Villa Veritas Foundation, Kerhonkson, New York, an inpatient rehabilitation and wellness center, providing healing focusing on the body, mind, and spirit for those with various forms of addictions, villaveritas.org. For inquiries.
There's a new world coming. and it's just around the bend. There's a new world coming. This one's coming to an end. There's a new voice calling, and you can hear it if you try. And it's growing stronger with every day that passes by. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a brand new morning rising clear and sweet and free. There's a new day dawning that belongs to you and me.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Jim Henler, Vera Karius-Kelly, Jen Smith, and Linda Ellerby. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We've been going round robin here and hearing from everyone and their thoughts. Jen Smith, you're up.
Oh, you know, what to add to this conversation? And, you know, I think the things that I'm thinking about moving forward definitely have to do with this, I think as the AP called it, an attack on the integrity of the voting process, which we've seen being teed up for weeks and months, really, leading up to this action. We've heard the president claim that. But, you know, I think about the people who casted their votes at home, who kept asking themselves the questions even before they went to the polls, does my vote count? And when you think about a case and all the lawsuits that are being filed, you know, in Pennsylvania, where there's a million votes still left to be counted, and yet there's a case that is questioning whether to accept those ballots. It's really confusing and stunning to voters in a lot of ways. You know, and for all this gloom and doom, you can't also ignore the national context. I mean, yes, we're all waiting to find out the presidential results, but we can't let that rain on the parade of some of the other milestones that have been made during this election. You know, again, the representation of women in legislature, of right. Native Americans in legislature, the turnout in general, and the records that are set to be broken right now is amazing and should be applauded and not be overshadowed by what we're all waiting for. Even though it's hard to think that way, we can't lose sight of that.
And then we go to Vera Karius-Kelly. Vera.
So my thoughts are basically, let's take a step away from what's happening domestically and examine this election from an international perspective. And obviously, people generally are somewhat stumped by what happened in the United States. A lot of people globally are sort of questioning the future role of the United States in the global context. In some communities, it's sort of a continuation of political theater in this country. In other places, in a lot of European countries, for example, there's deep concern that the United States has stepped away from a leadership position, and there's this affirmation now that Europe needs to organize itself around NATO, around the European Union principles of law and economic development, change towards, you know, figuring out their own leadership style. And basically, I think a lot of people are wondering who and what America, who America represents and what America is. And the only answer I have is there are so many different communities. It's not a United States of America. It's many micro communities. And we see the results coming in and the different kinds of expressions of hope and aspiration. And that we really need to investigate in the future. I don't think that the United States looks like a democracy. speaks like a democracy and behaves like a democracy in the eyes of many community members around the world. And I think that is the takeaway. I get so many questions that basically begin with, can you explain America to me? A very basic question. What is its commitment to democracy, equality, inclusion? What is its goal in terms of its global positioning, its international outlook, its sense of commitment to human rights and justice,
so,
and integration and inclusion? There are a lot of questions related to that.
So I understand those points, but doesn't that depend, and a large response will be who we democratically elect as our next president?
I don't think it matters anymore, to be honest. I mean, it matters to an extent, but not to the same extent that we are having this conversation, because, you know, Biden is carefully watched in the Middle East. Of course, he has a history there, and not everybody has been, you know, they're hoping for a Biden win in many places, but it's not an enthusiastic embrace across the board. Trump has been, for example, hated by women activists in Afghanistan because of his announcement that he would pull out all American troops and any commitment to Afghanistan. And women are deeply concerned in urban environments, the ones that are organized, that have been able to pursue careers and their educational goals. They are deeply concerned about what this, the outcome of this election means for them. And a Biden outcome, of course, would be much better for them. But how much better? Because the United States will have to be so focused on somehow figuring out a path forward. And a Biden presidency under the current conditions doesn't even allow for bold steps in terms of the international arena. The best we can hope for is maybe an infrastructure bill that supports it.
Alan, any thoughts on that?
I'm sure it's a great thing to have Vera here to talk about what other people are thinking about this country. But I myself am looking at the little boxes that tell us who has come in and what. Somebody wrote us a note, Joe. Somebody wrote us a note and said that they thought there was only six electoral votes that were needed. And as when I went to sleep last night, that's what I was seeing.
Well,
but now I'm seeing something else. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Joe.
Well, no, the issue is, and that's an interesting point, and I'll bring Jim in on this as well. So what happened is that the Associated Press, as well as Fox News, I will add, put Arizona in the win column for Joe Biden. So the Associated Press call included Arizona. So the numbers that show just six votes, Joe Biden just six votes away from victory, is including Arizona. What we have learned, however, is that Arizona is still a very, very close state. It remains close and razor thin, and those numbers are changing just about every hour. So while some news organizations, again, the Associated Press and Fox News being two of them, other places, including CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times, Washington Post, have not included Arizona in their totals. Jim, can you give us a sense as to why the AP, who is supposed to be the adult in the room here when it comes to the such matters, would give it to Arizona, and when it becomes closer, of not taketh away?
So, you know, I'm looking at the actual numbers and counties and things like that. And of course, as things dribble in, it's hard to say. But, you know, the Fox News report came at a time where some numbers had been reported wrong. The AP came after the numbers were reported right. But I think everybody is using a model of what do the votes that we haven't counted yet look like. Right. So you do some kind of math on how many votes are out, how many votes, you know, separate the candidates, and what's the difference. And I think what those who are calling Arizona are doing is saying, you know, we're assuming the mail-in votes are favoring you know, the late votes, all the votes that haven't been counted yet in various ways are favoring Biden. I think what, and frankly, that's what most people were thinking last night. Then a group of those votes came in from Arizona that didn't break the way they were expected. They were more favorable to Trump than expected. That changes the math. Back of the envelope, I see Arizona literally down to a few thousand votes different if you do the, you know, if you just look at how much is out and what the exact percentages are. And you know, that means tiny differences can make a difference. North Carolina, I can't figure out why it hasn't been called yet because, right. you know, mathematically, I don't see the votes there. Georgia, I actually still think is going to go to Trump, much closer than I expected. But if it goes to Biden, it'll be, you know, again, under 10,000 votes, according to the math. And again, these things can change because we're still guessing because the numbers aren't official yet. Pennsylvania is going to be close. I mean, this is crazy. And you know, it's a funny day to be a data geek because the data is not complete yet. By this time, last election, I could already tell you from the results and from looking at counties what was going on. This election, we're not there yet. I mean, there's some good news on that respect in Michigan and Wisconsin, but that's about it.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue. Just a quick programming note. Alan will be in conversation with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo beginning at 10:30 this morning. So we're going to end the panel in just about 45 minutes. And so, panelists, you get like a quarter of a snow day. And you will, so we'll go till 10:30 this morning. Alan will talk with the governor. Then Alan will join me at 11 o'clock. And at about 11:10, we'll be talking to Tim Versalotti about polling. And so all of that coming up on the program. So let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with the panel and include your letters. There are many of them. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Love is not the easy thing, the only baggage that you can bring. Love is not the easy thing, the only baggage you can bring is all that you can't leave behind.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jim Henler, Jen Smith, Vera Carius Kelly, and Linda Ellerbe.
Joe, the wonderful letter we got from where? Egypt, where Jim Ketterer, of course, that's where he works, is. And he's, dear roundtable friends, I'm listening to you from Egypt. Linda makes an important point about the lawyering for Bush versus Gore in 2000. It's worth remembering who two of those lawyers were. Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett. Jim, how's that?
Good points. Very good points. All right, and we wish Jim well.
Thank Jim for making me even more cheerful.
Yes, there's always that. All right, let's go to a couple of letters here. Mike says, to Jen's point of applauding the record voter turnout, that means absolutely nothing if all valid votes aren't counted, to the president's email a few moments ago of stop the count. The most odd thing, Linda, that happened yesterday to me was the president saying to stop the count in Michigan, which would have put and kept Biden ahead. So I was a little stymied by that one.
Well, the president and I share one thing, and that is, I hope it's the only thing we share, but we both appear to be math challenged. because we were at my house here, we were shaking our heads like crazy at that notion of, well, wait a minute, what does he mean he wants to stop the count there?
Well, and
obviously, it is a mistake. Look, we have become a fact-free nation. We have become a logic-free nation. And yet, And I know we're going to get to this, but I'm going to go ahead and get to it now, and that is the subject of polling. The outcome of this election, if nothing else, and I don't care who becomes president, it is clear that we are a racist, white supremacist nation. And when it comes to what, oh my goodness, I've seen so many stories in the last 2 days about what went wrong with the polling. And was it the, quote, shy Republicans, or are Republicans just didn't pick up, Trump supporters didn't pick up the phone when the polls called? No, they weren't shy, and they did pick up the phone. They lied. It is a single basic flaw in polling, in that we vote by secret ballot. The idea that we consider calling people on the phone and asking them questions and that they will give you the same answers they plan to do when they go into the ballot and when they go in to vote is silly. I said it was silly in 2016 and that it was going to turn on us, and it did then. And then, I must admit, my partner Rolf and I have a sincere disagreement about this. For the last 4 years, he has tried to tell me why the polling was actually really right and why it was about Hillary and why it was this. And I continue to say people are lying to the pollsters. They are lying to them because many, many people, other than the racists we know who are perfectly fine saying they're racist, there are still many people in this country who are racist but are not perfectly fine saying they are. There are Trump supporters who are Trump supporters but will not tell you they are, and they don't have to because we vote by secret ballot. And I think it is time to get past the polling as a way to report news. And part of the problem with that is that we have closed down so many newspapers around this country that it is very hard to get out and report news as well as we used to be able to do. Plus, it is just much easier and cheaper to rely on polling. Well, folks, this is where our polling got us this time. There was no blue wave. And when you talk about, let's say, let's hooray for the big turnouts, you must take into account how much of the big turnouts were people coming to vote for Trump, too.
Is your prediction, Linda, that we will not have polling in the future? Because my prediction is we will.
I have no idea. I think we probably will go on and keep telling ourselves reasons of why. Well, we just got it wrong this time because we just didn't ask the questions. You know, years ago, I worked for a man named Reuven Frank. And now what I'm about to say is a generalization, which means it's false because all generalizations are false, including that one. But one day, this had to be like this was in the 70s, okay? And he turned to me. I said something about, well, the polling says. And he said, well, Linda, if polling is so accurate, why are there so many companies doing it? And I said, excuse me? And he said, well, the Nielsen company rates the television shows. We don't have 40 companies rating it. And I stopped and just thought about the basic truth of what he said. Because we all know that polling is rather like studies. You know, I mean, studies spend a lot of money to prove that a jackass has two ears, something that common sense would tell you. We spend a lot of money on polling, and it always depends on who is asking the questions, how are the questions phrased, and who they are asking the questions of. All of these things come into play. This is not a science, polling. I did not listen to you all or anybody else on election day up until that night because I did not want to hear more speculation or journalism by polls.
So
now, Rosemary and I happen to be in agreement here, and we have been having little side chats on the side that we hated to be Cassandras, and it wasn't any fun, but we said so.
Now, let me go to Jim Handler, because I am interested, sir, if you would like to defend data and defend polling. And please do not feel obligated to do so, but I'm just curious of your thoughts.
Well, I'm happy to defend data and to some degree defend polling. Here's a lot of what I think has happened in the past two major elections. And to some degree in the off year, in the 2018, is polling depends on what are called models, and models are based on what has happened in the past. So when you get a major change of some kind, the polls become less and less reliable. You know what? The guy who I consider my guru in this, Nate Silver of 538, you know, has been saying all along, you know, our polls, our projections are showing us with this major Biden thing, but we've never had mail-in voting like this before. We've never seen this many voters before. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you vote? You know, the other thing about polling is it's more precise the more people involved. So a national poll actually gets you closer to the real numbers. And if you actually look at the national poll and how much it was favoring Biden, and you look at the fact that he's up by about 3.6 million votes at this point, with most of the votes yet to be counted, at best splitting, right? We're talking about, you know, somebody who did as well as expected nationally. But when you get down to the state by states where, you know, polls are so weird, and you're right, Linda, we don't have a national polling. There's not an easy way to do that because someone would have to do, you know, takes a lot of money to run a poll in even in one area, on and on. So you know, my fast answer is looking at data from last elections and looking at what you see as the trends and the critical places strikes me as a much more important thing than the polls. And I think, I hope, by 2022, 2024, we're going to start seeing more of that. So just as an example, right, when we looked at 2016, it became pretty clear, you know, those of us who looked at the data knew within 3 days, the rest of the world knew within, you know, 6 months or a year, that the biggest issue was what happened in suburban Michigan, suburban Wisconsin, suburban Pennsylvania to some degree, right? I'm looking at the counties in Wisconsin and Michigan. The counties that swapped, that made the difference, are all suburban counties outside the big cities. So watching that trend would have told you more about Michigan, Wisconsin than polling all of Michigan and Wisconsin did. There's other theories about what's causing it. You know, again, I don't believe the shy Trump voter for exactly the reason. When they say, as far as I can tell, the Trump voters can't wait to tell me they voted for Trump and why. But I think some of it is suspicion of the media. Again, you know, someone calls up and says, hi, I'm from the New York Times. I'm doing a poll. Right. Trump voters are like, you know, we don't trust the New York Times. Goodbye. So, you know, there was an interesting article in Wired. I'll share it on my Twitter account, talking about this, saying that, you know, in almost all of the authoritarian cases, the Brexit vote or populist Brexit vote, some Brazil, things like that, a lot of what we've seen is polling going the wrong direction. And they believe that that's because the people who come from that background are the people who won't talk to the pollsters. So again, you know, we're going to have to rethink what we do and how we analyze. We can't defend the polls at all, but data is the only way to know what happened and what to do about it.
I would like
Maybe
to just
a
add
fine thing for hindsight, but it's a poor thing to be going into the election thinking, boy, we're about to see a blue wave because the polls told us we would.
Yeah, Jen, we got to agree with. Jen, we got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I think polls, again, are a snapshot. And by the time we report on the polls, you know, that snapshot has passed. And the other concern I have about polls is just if you're going to change the formula for polls, you have to think about representation. In my 20 years as a registered voter, not once have I been polled. And as a brown woman living in America, that makes me angry.
Understood, and rightfully so.
No, we're... Jen, I've never been polled either.
It's a journalist in you.
Because I thought they were avoiding me because I was a journalist.
Yeah, I thought so.
Same thing with jury duty.
Well,
I've never been a Nielsen family either, and I always wanted to be that.
We have to take a break. We're going to go to NPR News at the top of the hour. A reminder, Governor Andrew Cuomo and Alan Scharr talking conversation beginning at 10:30, and we will get to all of that and your letters. We have many more of them to read right after this. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Dr. Alan Chartok, Jim Henler, Vera Karius-Kelly, Jen Smith, Linda Ellerbe. And did I say Jim? I don't know. Did I say Jim? I don't know. Okay. But Jim's with us, too. Thank you, Alan. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. And I want to thank you very much for being with us. We are going to be together for about another 20 minutes. And then Alan is going to talk to the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo. And then we'll continue our program at 11 o'clock. I do want to get in some letters here from the group and panel. Feel free to barge in whenever you want to take over the conversation here. Jim writes, question, who are the 50% of the people that voted for Trump? We have 4 years and know what to expect. Is this what people want? Well, that's it, right? That's the question so many of us are asking.
Right.
Vera is right to say it
doesn't. I think we know who they are. I think we don't who they are. They are us. I don't mean the people on this show or necessarily the people listening to it. They are us. They are our relatives. They are our neighbors. They are people who like what he's doing. And I go back to this, and I hate to harp. We are more racist than we ever want to admit. We are all celebrating the big turnout, and we ought to be terribly worried about the big turnout among people who want to keep racism alive in America. And in order to do that, we as reporters and journalists and, you know, commentators, various things, we have to be able to come out and say this man is not just wrong or crazy, he's evil. And this is evil. And this is fascism. And this is Nazi behavior. And call it for what it is. Now, Alan has all along. But the general, quote, mainstream media or lamestream media, if you're the other side, we need to call it for what it is and stop pussyfooting around. And we need not to be stop congratulating ourselves on this big turnout and start asking ourselves, who else turned out big? And we know who it is.
Jen?
Yeah, you know, I think as we continue to decipher this, too, one of the bigger questions in my mind is, whose vote isn't counted? And we still have millions of people in this country whose votes don't count because they're either undocumented or incarcerated or they were discouraged from voting. So it's, you know, when you say who's voting, who isn't, you can't not look at the question at who's deterred from voting too.
Anybody else on that? All right, let's go to this letter from Jim, who says there are large swaths of our country that listen only to conservative talk radio, and because they never cut alternative opinion, convinced their listeners that their position is the only option in the only correct position to have. The conservatives convinced the court that equal time provisions within broadcast sources were no longer necessary, which has led us to the same extremely divided nation that we are. Susan said, I would say to Vera that... Yeah, go ahead, Alan.
No, this is for Jim.
Go ahead, Jim.
You know, there's a tendency on anything to try to blame the media, but I actually think there's an interesting effect here that probably needs a longer conversation sometime when we have time. But real quickly, I think the mainstream so-called news tends to be fair to Biden... I'm sorry, fair to Trump, even if it's considered pro-Biden. I think a lot of the more right-wing don't feel that. So Fox is sort of the best case of some of the right-wing media, scarily enough. And I think that really is having an impact that, you know, when Trump says something, everybody sees it. When Biden sees something, not everybody sees it. And that may be having a huge impact, particularly because of what Linda was saying before.
Susan writes to us and says, I would say to Vera that having lived through the early 60s when so much promise was in the air and the late 60s when many of us, as well as the Europeans, felt our democracy was crashing, that I have since read, listened, and learned that this has happened before in our history. Indeed, the European nations with their kindred imperialist tendencies have also failed to reach their grasp. But this morning
no doubt about it.
This morning
no doubt
I'm
about
so
it.
Very...
I mean,
Let me just I'll finish the letter, and then I'm going to read one more, and then I will cede to you, I promise. But this morning, I'm so very grateful for Biden, perhaps not the best, but looking so damn fine in contrast. I hope for him, for us, for America, for the world. Kathy says, Vera is right to say it doesn't matter who wins the presidency at this point. The United States is united behind the ideology of free markets. Nothing else comes close. The rest of the world needs to move on. Vera.
So I wanted to say the reputation of the United States has been severely damaged by this entire process, by the last 4 years, but also by the push for a certain type of globalization and expansionism into developing countries through neoliberal policies. And that is a reputation this country has. Using its might and power to advantage its own corporate interests, using its military to snuff out grassroots democratic movements, and then now under Trump withdrawing and leaving people behind. We remember perhaps about a year ago when Trump pulled out surprisingly elite troops from the Kurdish areas of Syria, and devastation followed when the Turkish military and its forces, allied forces, went in and killed people. So when you put these pieces together in a larger puzzle, not only has there been in many parts of the world suspicion towards the United States' interests economically, globally, in terms of its political and model and its economic status, now there's fear that internal divisions have completely sort of eroded the message that the United States has sent, at least attempted to send, that there is a strong value emphasis on the value of democracy. So overall, the beacon of democracy, the ideal that a lot of people from all over the world looked for in the United States, I think has been crumbling slightly over the past decades, but definitely now coming apart. And that is what I think is upsetting the world's balance for sure. Of course, China and Russia are sort of bemusedly watching what's happening here. They haven't said much. The Europeans are divided amongst themselves, and I'm not putting Europe on a pedestal at all, because they obviously have their own serious issues in terms of addressing poverty and marginalization among immigrant communities. So, but this sort of idealized notion of the democracy of the United States, inspiring populations globally, I think that is now definitely over.
Paul writes to us and says, my biggest disappointment Tuesday and thereafter thus far has been the result of the Maine Senate race, where a very good Democratic candidate lost to the fence-sitting, do-nothing Trump toady Susan Collins. What, if anything, does that say about the state of our electorate? Alan?
Well, it says that the people in Maine are sticking with what they got. I mean, I don't know that you can do much more than that. Again, the polls, which I was relying on, showed her in real trouble. But it turned out it wasn't even close.
Otha says, thank you, Linda. You're exactly correct. The racism is still hidden and unexamined story of America, and why we had Trump and may still have him. Mike says, even a Biden victory is now just a delaying tactic. We are living in a period of declining democracy in America. We may turn it around, and we certainly should keep trying, but the trend is against this. The Senate, the Supreme Court, and 40 million citizens are aligned with the fascists. The majority of Americans are liberal Democrats, but that doesn't seem to matter. Fox News keeps telling lies, and more people are taken in by those lies. Incumbent Republicans keep rigging elections. Our side will not resort to violence. This puts us at a disadvantage. We are losing. My plan is to tell anyone who will listen that a society of people who love and care for each other is the only kind worth having. I hope this is enough.
So
We all hope it's enough. The only issue I would take is... Go ahead, Jim. Sorry.
No, go ahead, Linda.
When to finish
no, you
your
go
thought.
Ahead. After you, Alphonse.
Okay. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, real quick, I was just going to say, to me, one of the points that the caller makes that's really stunning is, I don't have the exact numbers yet, but I've just been running some of the Senate numbers. And you look at the seats which flip, you look at how the Senate is currently made up, we're still going to have we're going to end up with a Republican Senate, likely, that represents less than 40% of the American people. It's kind of a craziness of how the Constitution was made, but at the time the Constitution was made, you didn't have nearly the craziness you have now, just how different the geographic distributions are between the coastal states and the middle states and things like that. So yes, absolutely, we have a kind of crazy system, and we're going to be stuck with it for a long time to come. Just have to figure out how to do things.
Linda.
I'm switching topics now. This is something Jim has said. We keep going back to the time at the time the Constitution was made. We didn't anticipate craziness. At the time the Constitution is made, we didn't anticipate women voting or black people voting either. So it works both ways. And lots of other things, yes. But the whole notion of, gee, this is not what the Constitution meant. The Constitution also didn't mean for me to have equal rights or for black people to have equal rights. It didn't mean that.
Absolutely. And by the way, I didn't say that didn't mean this. What I'm saying is the way our Constitution binds us to things is based on a 200-year-old model. And the way we amend it gives tremendous ability for a minority to make it impossible to amend equal rights protection, the women's amendment, which I'm blanking on the name of.
I agree with you on that, Jim, which is why
overwhelming support in the U.S. and yet we couldn't get it into the Constitution.
My original comment was to not take issue with you, but to take issue with the letter who said that the majority of Americans are liberal Democrats. I don't think that's supportable.
All right. Let's go to John.
I don't think it's – you have moderate Democrats. You have least maybe not my first choice, but my second choice. I don't think we're a nation of liberal Democrats.
And what does
and
that mean
even among Democrats,
these
some
days?
Of them don't like to be called liberal because they want to be called progressive. So.
Yeah, and that's the other point, Jen. What does that mean these days?
Exactly. And I think even moving forward, the Democratic Party, again, speaking of projections, Biden was supposed to come crashing in, and yet this candidate seems to be harder to support than the Democrats thought. And I think that's going to bring about a big reckoning within the Democratic Party.
Well, I think this whole thing was a referendum on Trump. I think, in a way, Biden was a best guy that the Democrats could name. He sort of stay out of the limelight, but this was, how evil do we think Trump is? And what's so frightening, and what frightens me personally in terms of my own predictions and everything else, is that there are so many people who, no matter what he says about where he would grab women and what he would do, and it's just beyond belief that this and I think Linda's right on the money, that this country is falling for it and is supporting it.
I want to
the poll. The early, when people were asked what issue matters to them the most going into, a week before the election, it was COVID. Day of, it was economy. So, that's the other thing. I don't think they changed. I think it's that somehow Trump's harping on the economy versus Biden's harping on, COVID somehow worked for Trump. So I think I agree with the racism comments and all that, but I think that was also, the incumbent power of being able to just talk about, some things they can do. So, I'm depressed. I know a lot of them.
Well, join the club.
Than, but I think it's much more complicated than just being racist.
I want to support Jim for a second on economic arguments. If you looked at the, I think it was in California, where on the ballot was the changes to the gig economy, right? And people voted in favor of leaving it the way, leaving gig workers unprotected and, you know, exposed to vulnerable economic shift. That tells you something. You know, in California, they're more supportive. Pardon me?
No, go ahead.
So in California, where people supposedly are so forward-looking and focused on racial and economic equality and issues related to integration and those kinds of concepts, yeah, in the abstract it worked. When it comes to actually paying people a fair wage or considering their housing struggles or the way they earn an income and if they can support their families, that is a whole different matter. It is about personal economic stability and protecting your own sort of realm in some of those elections. And that really emerged once again.
In other news, John writes to us.
That's a great example.
John writes to us and says, "You people alternatively crack me up and disgust me. Didn't take long for you to declare anyone who voted for Trump to be racist. Do you really believe this? ? The real racists are Democrats who look at everything through the lens of race and declare white people to be incurably racist. Your blindness is truly laughable and disgusting." One more paragraph. "All that being said, love the fact that you're all so unhappy and that there was no blue wave and the polls were so wrong again and that Trump came so close and may yet win. You deserve your disgusting elitist angst."
May I respond, please, just with one word?
Okay? Can you say the word?
Overall, I would like to say a very intelligent thought.
Anything on that, Alan?
Don't jump in the lake.
But that's one you're allowed to do on the radio.
Yeah.
The BS word you can't really say. But, you know, that letter is very representative of what some people are thinking in this country.
Well,
and
40?
We see it with what's coming
on.
Right. We do hear, by the way, Joe, that Nevada is soon to release some more data. And it'll be interesting to see whether that becomes a huge part of it.
Nevada is expected to release data around noon. Numbers are expected. They've been talking about this for several days in Nevada, but they are expected to release numbers at noon. We only have about a minute and a half here before we have to go. But in Georgia, they are expecting to give an update at 10:30 this morning. Fulton County in Georgia is expected to give an update at 11. In Nevada, they are expected to have a news conference. Well, I'm sorry. The Trump campaign actually is having a press conference in Nevada with a major announcement. That happening at 11:30. Then at noon is when Nevada officials say they will provide an update. In Arizona, they are saying 9 p.m. tonight. And Pennsylvania is expected to provide updates throughout this morning. However, they say that they are warning that the counting could continue for days as workers process a backlog of absentee and mail-in votes. So that is where we are at the moment in the counting. So we're going to go over and, yeah, there's a lot more angst. John is happy that we're filled with angst. I will, in the meantime, just pick up my prescription for the antidepressants and keep going.
Vamp till ready.
That's right. I want to thank...
A little early for the scotch this morning.
That's right. Jim.
I baked a chocolate cake and ate half of it, and I'm not even a baker.
Thank you all very much. We'll be right back.